the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to another edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler, and let's do a little bit of Hollywood lately. We've all heard stories about famous people, you know, the glitterati of the world, who make all sorts of money, and then we hear that they die broke. Sometimes they die themselves, meaning they commit suicide because they're broke. Johnny Depp, nope, he's still around. Don't worry about that. But he's in a suit with his business advisors for the $650 million he made and lost. Apparently, Mr. Depp is broke. There's something wrong with piracy nowadays. I'm not sure. Maybe these things had something to do with it. $30,000 a month for wine. $200,000 a month for flying in private jets, $400,000 on a single diamond cufflink, $3.6 million annually for a staff of 40 attendants and round-the-clock security, $5.4 million for three islands in the Bahamas, $18 million a year for his 136-foot yacht, $75 million on buying and renovating 14 homes. Do you realize you'd have to be moving around almost once a month to fill out those 14 homes? So you're wondering what that's all about. Apparently, Mr. Depp has a gazinta and a gazouta problem. He has more going out, gazouting than gazinting. And we've heard about that from other stars, Nicolas Cage and others. And when tragedy hits the stars, we all hear about it and shake our heads and go, how do they manage to do that anyway? I mean, you make all this money. You can live in one nice house, maybe two or something. Fly first class, it's easier to do that than it is to try to get private jets, etc. But it's not just movie stars who can go broke. Ta-da-da! The state of Illinois right now. The governor and the legislature, they're running up against a deadline crisis right around June 30th to make some serious decisions, or they may just pitch right into bankruptcy and have the honor of being the first state in the history of the United States to actually go bankrupt. But surprise, surprise, it can happen to you and to me, and it can catch us by surprise.
You know, this is one subject that we should discuss here today. It's probably, John, I would say one of the biggest mistakes we see in individuals with high income that spend most of what they earn. And here's the thing. You may be in a high-paying job, professional, even doctors, attorneys, or maybe your business is doing well. And then all of a sudden, when you least expect it, something happens. The economy goes into recession. Think about the deep recession that lasted from 2007 to the summer of 2009. Something happens in your business. Think of all the businesses that are being disrupted by technology today. I mean, the big story last week in the financial press was Amazon is buying Whole Foods and what that's going to do to the grocery business. Or think about the bear market. What was it like during the Great Recession? When housing prices fell nearly 40%, stocks represented by the S&P were down 58%. So everyone just expects life and the way things are going to continue without interruptions. But as you and I know, that isn't the way the world works. Think of your own life. Have you ever had something happen to you? You're at work. All of a sudden, the company you work for gets bought out by another company. What does that company do? They come in, they consolidate, layoffs abound. Or we have a severe recession like the one we had and went through in 2007 and 2009, following a more milder one that we had in 2000 and 2001. So there are a lot of things that can happen in your life, and we're going to talk about them and why, if you're one of those fortunate individuals, you're making a good living between maybe you and your wife, or maybe it's just you. You're in a good profession. You're getting paid well. You get bonuses. And then all of a sudden, something happens. The world changes.
Yeah, one of the areas you think about, I mean, in recent history, is what happened during the 2000s. People were making money hand over fist. Mortgage brokers were closing on houses as people were buying them. And the mortgage brokers knew that the people that they were qualifying for these loans, and we'll put qualifying in quotes, were going to be bankrupt within 24 months. They knew it, but they got their commission. They didn't care. They made their money on that. And then all of a sudden, everything blew apart.
It was not only mortgage brokers. They were making six figures. They were people that got into real estate as a career. I mean, why not? I mean, houses were going up 15, 20%, double digits a year. And that's significant when you think of the amount of leverage that was used in real estate. And so it looked like the good times were going to roll. I mean, even Ben Bernanke, when he was asked in 2007 if he was worried about the real estate market, and he said, absolutely not. He said, the real estate market's fine. Real estate always does well. Well, we know it doesn't, because from about 2007 until about 2012, not only did housing prices fall by 40%, but it took several years into the recovery, and it wasn't until 2012 that the housing market began to turn around. So those that were in the real estate, those who were making mortgage brokers, I mean, I knew a lot of mortgage brokers that were making high six figures a year because everybody was refinancing their loans. There was a lot of trading up. There was house flipping. Then all of a sudden, the Great Recession hit. Real estate went into a free fall along with prices and along with the stock market. So homeowners, instead of flipping, now found themselves where they were upside down and interest rates were going up on those sucker mortgages. So the whole world can change when you least expect it. Now, this has been a very slow recovery, but it's been a long recovery, the third longest on record. But we do know that business cycles haven't been repealed. The government nor the Fed has been able to stop them. And somewhere down the road, whether it's next year, the year after, I don't know which year it is, but we will have another recession and we will have another bear market.
Yeah, what really clobbered the baby boomers, and I remember even my neighbors, Jim, got into property flipping and then got stuck. I mean, first of all, they saw not only the bursting of the tech bubble with people originally making 15% annually in stocks, then we slid down into that minor recession, and all of a sudden we were boom into the real estate boom with houses zooming up 15% a year. And as you've always pointed out, Jim, by the time everybody realizes what's happening and the little guys are jumping in saying, boy, you can make a million here. Let's go do this. That's about when the market's ready to roll over. And interest rates went up. Stock market lost 60%. And real estate prices, the bottom just came out of them in a way we haven't seen in a lifetime. A lot of people got stuck with inverted properties and everything else. And this affected a lot of retirement planning for a lot of people.
It was not just the fact that stocks went down, John, but also interest rates went down as well. So a lot of people that were retired, maybe they didn't have as much invested in real estate or the stock market. A lot of individuals went into bond funds, which, you know, if you go back to the year 2000, you were making a fairly decent amount of income on these bond funds. But think about what happened by the summer of last year when one third of all sovereign debt in the world offered negative interest rates, meaning that you paid the government to loan them money. So imagine if you retired in the year 2000, where you could have easily gotten 7 to 8% on a bond. And I'm talking about a high quality corporate bond. You could have got probably 6% on high quality treasuries. And then by 2007, as the Fed began to raise interest rates, you were getting 5 and 6%. Well, imagine what has happened to you since 2007. Well, let's put it this way. If you had $1 million in the year 2000, you would have got $70,000 to $80,000 a year annually in income in something that was very, very safe. By the year 2007, you couldn't get $70,000 or $80,000, but you could have got $50,000 to $60,000, which is still halfway decent. Fast forward to where we are today, that $1 million, if invested for 10 years in a bond, would only produce $21,000 a year. So if you think about what has happened, your income has fallen by almost 75%. So imagine going from $80,000 a year to $20,000 a year, that's a reduction of income by almost 75%. So, John, there are a lot of millions of retirees that have been invested in bond funds, and especially following the Great Recession, when real estate fell, the stock market fell, and it seemed like the world was going to come apart, people were just looking for safe things. And you went into a bond fund, and every single year, you saw your income go down as interest rates came down, including all the way to where we were last summer. And even worse, those that were living on withdrawals, let's say you had your money invested in mutual funds or ETFs, whatever you were invested in, and you were taking out, I don't know, a 4 or 5% withdrawal rate. So using the $1 million figure, you were taking out $50,000 a year or $40,000 a year. If you did that in 2007 all the way through 2009, you were liquidating your shares at a time the S&P lost nearly 60%. About the only thing that did well during that period of time is if you were in a bond fund, it appreciated, even though the dividends went down, at least the principal went up. But if you were in stock funds and making withdrawals, you were depleting your principal at a much more rapid pace.
You know, something that we have talked about quite a bit on the program, I know it's come up in a lot of case studies too, and that's called unplanned medical expenses and illnesses, because a lot of times you're going along just fine, and one of the risks and dangers that you're going to run into is unplanned for, all of a sudden, expensive medical issues, and things can pop on you rather rapidly. I mean, a perfect example in my case was that for the last 5 years of my mother's life, we took her in. We actually planned for it when we bought our house here and created a mother-in-law suite. So she had have her own sitting area and bedroom and bathroom and walk-in closet and everything, and could have privacy, but could join us when she wanted to do it. But as she got to the end of her life, all of a sudden, the last month and a half were full of a large amount of medical issues. We had full-time 24-hour nurse present on the property and things like that. And fortunately, there was enough planning in what my father had done, and then subsequently what you and I did, you know, as part of our portfolio here, that we were able to absorb that pretty easily.
Yeah, I'm dealing with a client right now whose mother has Alzheimer's, and that was not planned for. I mean, now the family members are all having to kick in to take care of mom, trying to avoid liquidating assets and trying to fix up the home and put it on the market, because as her income fell in the last decade, as interest came down on CDs, bonds, and things like that, she put a reverse mortgage on the home. And of course, that was eating into the equity. And so basically what the family members did is all the family got together, and all of a sudden, they all had to chip in because mom did not have enough income to live in a full-time care facility, which is where she needed to be, because she needed, just like your mom, John, she needed around-the-clock 24-hour care. So in this case, she supplemented her income by taking the equity in her home and putting in a reverse mortgage. So that added extra income, but as anybody that has a reverse mortgage knows, that that interest accumulates, and when the individual passes on, that either goes to the bank or whatever's accumulated is subtracted from the equity. So here's a good example of a mother that was doing fine, made provisions by taking out a reverse mortgage to supplement her income because it wasn't enough, and then all of a sudden has a stroke, is diagnosed with dementia, and then it turns into Alzheimer's, and now the family is dealing with long-term care, which is running well over $6,000 a month. Thank goodness she doesn't live in California. It would be even more.
Okay, so medical, we've talked about that a lot. It's the obvious one that can rapidly change your life. What are some of the other ones? I'm trying to think of what that might be.
Let's talk about what happened to a lot of people in the last recession. All of a sudden, you planned on working for the company until age 65 or 66 when you could retire at full retirement age. And all of a sudden, a recession comes along, or as we've seen so many times, all of a sudden the company is bought out or it's merged with another company and you're laid off. We're still dealing with this. Several individuals that we've had to deal with are still dealing with income levels that aren't where they used to be, going back to the Great Recession. And think of the technology, the disruptive force of what technology is doing to various businesses. And, you know, take a look at mergers, what that does. Take a look at what the internet has done to retailers and shopping malls. And take a look at what robotics is doing in terms of automation of manufacturing and even the fast food business. The more that they raise the minimum wage, the more that you will see places like McDonald's and fast food chains automate. You're already starting to see it today with mobile apps and kiosks. So technology can disrupt the status quo. The point being here is you never want to get yourself, if you are fortunate between you and your wife and you're doing well, not to overspend, or you can get caught up when you least expect it by either a recession, a bear market could devastate your portfolio, a job layoff, or God forbid, some unforeseen medical expense or medical event, as my client's mother having a stroke, falling and hitting her head and doing severe damage. So you have to learn to put away money for that rainy day, because when you least expect it, something always happens. It always does. And if you just think back of the last 15 years, the last 17 years, whether it's the market, whether it's recessions, or even it might be a health issue of things that happen.
Yeah, it's interesting, Jim, as we talk about that. You know, we watch the dogfights that are going on in the media in Washington, oftentimes over diddlem, and we're really plowing into some real economic rough waters. This is a heads up for everybody, and just chew on it and digest it. Government benefits are going to be reduced, period. That's what's going to happen. Medicare is covering less and less. Social Security is paying out now. We crossed that threshold a little while back where it's now laying out more than it's taking in. And you don't have to be a genius to figure this one out. Watching Illinois, Jim, I was flabbergasted. I didn't have it just before we got on the air here. I read it earlier in the day. The quantity of unfunded pensions in Illinois alone. Now, these are things that people are relying on for retirement as part of their income. And if Illinois doesn't get its act straight within a month, we're on a clock here now, right? Everything goes over the edge, and basically that's it. It's all over. I actually thought your state, California, was going to make it to the finish line first in the race to the bottom, but it looks like Illinois is going to do it. And by the way, they're going to rename Puerto Rico Puerto Pobre, okay, which means poor port instead of rich port. But think about that. Think of all these pensions. We know that by about 2020, most of the government, now I don't mean just federal, but I mean at state levels as well, most of these pension programs are going to be bankrupt.
They're not only going to be bankrupt, but even California, which dodged a bullet coming out with the recovery with the social media revolution that took place here. I mean, when Facebook went public, California took in over $2 billion in tax revenues. And the government's new budget says the next recession, they're going to be running $20 billion deficits. And on top of that, John, they just raised taxes $52 billion, $5.2 billion a year, because they cannot cover the expenses of entitlement and pensions. They simply, and we're the richest state in the country. So you're absolutely right. This is the next thing that's going to happen. You're going to see a reform come to government defined benefit pension plans because they're unsustainable. They're just simply isn't the money, and the private sector is not about to go into hawk to pay for these government pensions. So you're seeing it in Illinois, you're seeing it in other states, and soon it'll be coming here to my own state of California.
Well, I guess the question then here for what we talk about on the program is, how do you plan for this type of risk? Life is full of risks, and you're always going to have them. You can't anticipate every one of them. But you have recessions, bear markets, pension plan disasters, layoffs, mergers. How do you insulate yourself from this so that when you are retiring, there's a certain level of peace of mind?
You know, the one thing I think that is very, very important is, you know, we talk about this. We do this every time we do a financial plan for our clients or pre-retirement, is you start with a budget that emphasizes savings. In other words, you take a look at what you're bringing in, what you're spending, and you better make provisions that you're building money in savings, building up a bank account. And I'm not talking about investing. I'm not talking about your 401k plan. I'm talking about putting money in a money market fund or money in a savings account at a bank. the first thing that you should do before you even invest is have a cash reserve that can help you.
So, Jim, if you're planning for this, are there benchmarks that you can use as sort of a field guide for doing this, like X amount of dollars you might want to have in cash reserve or somewhere else in a balance, and then you're able to function when things strike?
You know, John, for the longest period of time, the standard that was probably used in financial planning, retirement planning, was 3 to 6 months of cash in the bank. But given the events that we have seen in the last probably decade, John, we change that and recommend that an individual have 1 year's worth of living expense. Now, that may seem like a lot of money, and it is, depending on what your budget is. But here's the why. Think about you're at work and you get laid off. The company gets merged, gets bought off, or we get into a recession and you're let go. You thought you were going to have that high-paying job. Think of how much less stress will be in your life if you know you have a cushion, a 1 year's worth of reserves to find a job. And take a look at the last recession. It lasted 2 years. There were a lot of people that did not find jobs immediately. So 1 year's worth of living expense so that you can handle a recession. The other thing, maybe between the two of you, one spouse gets laid off. And so all of a sudden, you've lost that income. Now, at least you have enough in savings where you can make up that loss of income. So you're not stretching there, missing a mortgage payment, a car payment, or something like that. Or think of this, medical expenses that come up that you didn't plan for. A serious expense that either Medigap insurance doesn't cover. And as we talked about earlier, Medicare is covering less and less, and it's going to get that way. And you're going to see more of that as we go forward. Or here's one that's on the positive side. What about a bear market? Think of when stocks are down 58% or real estate is down 40%, having large liquid reserves that you could employ to either buy stocks at depressed prices, bonds at depressed prices, or real estate at depressed prices. Cash should be part of every budget and every portfolio. If you're putting your money, you don't have much in savings, and you're investing in stock mutual funds, stock ETFs, you are doing yourself a disservice, because how do you know when the next bear market starts, and it is a bear market, and you're seeing your portfolio drop 10, 15, 20%, and all of a sudden you lose a job or something happens and your life is disrupted and the stock market is down. You don't want to be caught short. So cash should begin in every single portfolio.
So what we are recommending here then is that as you're planning for retirement and you're saving towards it, you should have enough to cover 1 year's worth of living expenses. And, you know, for those of you making really good money, a recession, a bear market, job layoff, unexpected medical expenses, or any emergency can be covered as long as you've got some cash reserve in there. And if you don't have it, then you're going to be in trouble. So planning for a year's worth of living expenses is an important tactic when you're preparing for retirement. And I would like to remind everybody that tomorrow on the program, Rob Bernard will be joining us, Vice President of PFS Group. The subject, annuities, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And this is something you're going to want to hear if you are investing in annuities as a preparation for retirement. Now it's time to what we call the real life case study. Remember that this is an hypothetical illustration based on real life examples. Names and circumstances have been changed. And we do have slides online at financialsense.com, which illustrate the points that Jim is making.
This week, our case study is Bob Green. Bob is age 66. He's retired, life expectancy right around 93. Have you noticed, John, with life expectancy, we're seeing that become the age more and more today. You know, we used to talk about people living in their 70s and his 80s. Now we're talking about 90s. He's moderately conservative. His objective is income with capital preservation. He's a government contractor. Bob has been a government contractor for over 30 years and just recently retired. Now he's managed his own finances and considers himself a fairly moderate conservative investor. He mainly invests in ETFs and bond funds. Bob never married and has greatly enjoyed the single life. Unfortunately, he was just recently diagnosed with a rare autoimmune disorder. Now, given Bob's recent shift in his life circumstances, he decided to take some time for himself to travel the world, enjoy life while he remains healthy. Bob would like to maintain that lifestyle without making any sacrifices or lowering his living expenses. He's somewhat concerned about longevity, given that his parents and grandparents all lived well into their 90s, something that we see more and more today with individuals. Bob's also concerned about the cost of long-term care, especially given his medical condition. Now, when we took a look at his portfolio, his risk score was 4. That's who he was as an individual and what he thought he could tolerate in risk. When we took a look at his portfolio and the aggressiveness in which it was invested, his portfolio scored on 8. So almost twice as aggressive as Bob's own investment philosophy. Now, what was important to him was maximizing his income. Taking care of health with his autoimmune disease was a real big issue. Maintaining lifestyle and manage the cost of assisted living, which eventually something he was going to have to face. Now, on his budget, and remember, we just talked about how budgets are so key. I can't emphasize this over and over again. A lot of the problems that we run into today in financial planning, retirement planning, are budgetary issues. His essential budget was $45,000, discretionary $32,000. A lot of that was travel, $77,000. Bob's pension, $42,000. His Social Security was $24,000, so a shortfall of about $11,000 without looking at investments. Projected medical cost was $257,000, and we also took a look at assisted living. 4 years at $96,000 a year would be $384,000. So his projected medical cost is $641,000. And if you live in California, folks, around the clock medical care in assisted facility is, because he didn't want to go to something that was not expensive, and he already looked into what it would cost, and that was going to be about $96,000. His primary residence was $480,000. He had a mortgage on it, and the reason his thinking was, well, interest rates got down to low levels. Why pay it off when he was investing and the market was going up? He was overly invested in stocks, in stock ETFs. Bob's retirement plan was $315,000. Individual investments, $940,000. CDs and cash were $100,000. Now, getting back to what I just said, a year's worth of living expense, he was thinking, I have too much in cash. And I said, no, you don't. $100,000 is more than enough of a year's worth of living expense. And so total assets were about $1.8 million. With $250,000 of liability. So the big challenge for Bob was covering future anticipated medical costs because of his autoimmune disease. Eventually, he would be needing assisted care. He wanted to maintain his current lifestyle, and he wanted to manage risk of concerns about basically outliving his assets. We did a balanced portfolio based on dividends and interest rate floating bonds, and the portfolio produced close to 3%. That produced $35,000 of income that would give him $101,000 against expenses of $77,000. Now, what was key here is $101,000 sounds like a lot of money. It's not a lot of money when you're in a retirement home, and it's going to cost you $96,000 a year. But for the meantime, he had surplus income, which we wanted to build a reserve. Due to the diagnosis, he does not qualify for long-term care. He couldn't get insured. Instead, we used a portion of his assets for an indexed annuity that had special riders for long-term care needs. This would help meet any further needs to better manage those expenses, because his situation wasn't one where you could say, well, probability I could end up like that. He knows he's going to have to face long-term care eventually with his disease. We reviewed current Medicare supplements to make sure they met his needs and were cost efficient. We reallocated assets to focus on income and reduce his risk level and getting it back closer to his risk score of 4. If longevity becomes a concern, then he could always sell his house, which he would want to do, or perhaps consider a reverse mortgage to meet funding shortfall. But hopefully with the annuity building up, and also that we were surplus income of $24,000, we were going to build a kitty, and then eventually we would want to have almost 4 years worth of long-term care that would be immediately liquid, because in Bob's case, he is going to be needing long-term care eventually. Whether it's 5 years or 10 years really depends on the progression of the disease itself. But anyway, that was a case, John, where based on the disease, we just couldn't get long-term care, even though he was at an age where it would, for most people, it would still be affordable.
And again, coming up tomorrow is Vice President of PFS Group, Rob Bernard, talking about annuities, the good ones, the bad ones, and the purely ugly ones. So as we look forward on the weeks to come, Jim, I don't know. I think watching Illinois is going to be key in terms of pensions and unfunded pensions by a state, you know, because this affects retirement planning. As we said, they're not the only one just because they're facing bankruptcy. Even if the state's somewhat okay, pensions may not be. And of course, the pensions are consuming a large part of budgets. And then courts are getting into the act in Illinois. They're dictating which payments the state is going to make. And even now, if you can believe it, in Illinois, Powerball and Mega Millions are in danger, the lottery in the state, which generates a lot of their income, but they may not be able to pay out the winnings. You know, so I,
oh my goodness, can you imagine where they say it's $300 million, but you decide I'll take it up front? They simply don't have the money.
Yeah, I mean, and to be honest with you, if I won something like that, you know, significantly, I would take it up front, even if I took a heavy tax hit, and then go ahead and invest the other half of it. You know, it'd be about a 50% tax or whatever, maybe. And I would invest the other half of it and make the money that way, rather than rely on the fact the state's going to be around paying on that stuff 20 years from now. Well, it may not be.
Yeah. No, may not. And that's why I think you're seeing a lot of people elect, in the majority of cases, when they win the lottery, to take the money up front.
So what are we looking forward to? Anything up in the weeks ahead? As I said, watching state pensions in Illinois is going to be critical. Anything else regarding retirement?
We're really going to start focusing on cash flow, because we've got a lot of requests from it. A lot of people have seen their income drop over the last year with interest rates coming down, somewhat reluctant to go full steam in the stock market, even though we're hitting new records. And quite honestly, John, they're seeing their medical costs go. I don't care if you're on Medicare, if you're working, seeing your medical expenses. I mean, I just know as a firm, we've seen our medical costs go up at double digits every single year. And hopefully they're going to be able to get this under control. But I mean, we've had to go to different kind of options. We've had to increase deductibles. These kind of things are going up. So we're going to talk about managing cash flow, because that seems to be an issue that more and more people are facing. All that will be coming up in the weeks ahead. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.